Jury selection began this week in a Sioux Falls courtroom to decide the fate of confessed killer James McVeigh. The state is seeking the death penalty for McVeigh, who pleaded guilty but mentally ill to first-degree murder in the July 2011 stabbing death of 75-year-old Maybelle Shine. McVeigh stole her car, drove it to Madison, Wisconsin, where he was apprehended, and McVeigh later told investigators that Shine's killing was part of a plot to rob and kill his way to Washington, D.C., where he would assassinate President Obama. Courts and crime reporter John Holt is covering the story for the Sioux Falls Argus Leader, and he joins us on the line. And John, welcome back to Dakota Midday.
Thanks for having me, as always.
Well, McVeigh pleaded guilty but mentally ill December of 2011. Why has it taken over 2 years to start selecting a jury?
Well, there are a lot of reasons. Number one, it's a death penalty case, which means that it's more complex just from the get-go. There are three lawyers generally assigned to a death penalty case instead of two. I mean, it's something that they're very cautious in proceeding with any case like that. But there have been a lot of motions filed, motions to suppress statements made by James McVeigh, which is a fairly normal thing. But James McVeigh made a very, very long statement, several very, very long statements to a lot of organizations, news organizations, to detectives. He wrote letters, well, to me and to Kelloland News. He said a lot of things after the murder, and his defense lawyers wanted to keep the jury from hearing those things. So there were a lot of there were motions filed there. There were hearings on those matters, and of course the idea that he's pleaded guilty but mentally ill, but is still eligible for the death penalty, or at least the state is still seeking the death penalty. That was also an issue. There were several hearings held with regard to that, because guilty but mentally ill is different from a plea of insanity, in that mental illness is factored into a sentencing consideration, but it's not something that means you don't know right from wrong. You're considered a competent defendant, and defense lawyers argued that a plea like that does not allow for a person to be given the death penalty in South Dakota. So there were a lot of motions, hearings, a lot of sort of minutia that they had to work through before they got to jury selection.
Why was he so talkative after he was arrested, that he was talking with you and others in the media?
Well, yeah, I mean, we should note here that you said that he was apprehended in Madison, Wisconsin. Within days, he gave a jailhouse interview to a television reporter in Wisconsin, and in which he said he planned to get President Obama on the golf course, you know. And in the months that followed, he was sending letters to me. He sent a letter to me, and I think he sent the same thing to Kelloland News, and in which he explained the situation. I don't know why he sent those. I don't know what his intention was there, but I do know that during the motions hearings on suppression of the statements that he made to the television, reporters, and suppression of the statements that he made to police, his lawyers said, look, he was high, essentially. He had shoplifted some Jack Daniels and some cough syrup from Walmart prior to the murder, and he said that he had spent the night, he sort of used these things to induce hallucinations, and he said that he'd spent the night under a bridge praying to Lucifer for the strength to carry out his mission. And then when he was found in Madison, he told the police that he had purchased some crack cocaine from someone on the street there. And basically his lawyers said that he was not in any sort of a mental state to be making statements, to be giving up his right to remain silent, and that those statements were unnecessarily prejudicial, considering where their client is now mentally and where he was at the time. Because you'll recall that he actually spent 2 months in disciplinary segregation, basically solitary confinement in the penitentiary, and was released directly from solitary confinement or disciplinary segregation. He may or may not have had some roommates during the 2 month period that he was alone, but he was released directly from that into a community transition program, which is essentially a bed at the work release center at the penitentiary. So he spent a couple of months ruminating and planning, and then he was released into a facility at the penitentiary that gave him the ability to just sort of walk freely in the community. So essentially their argument was anything that he said during this period of time should be suspect, and it's not something that ought to be used to judge him as a human being, as a whole person, which is what jurors are asked to do in a death sentencing proceeding.
His statement that he was planning on assassinating the president, wouldn't that bring federal charges?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. I know that at one point he was in Nebraska. He was in a Nebraska facility, and he had made some statements threatening Vice President Joe Biden, and the Secret Service showed up and questioned him about that. But in terms of his assertions that he planned to assassinate the president, nothing has come of that in terms of federal charges. I'm not exactly certain why that wouldn't happen. I mean, I think the fact that he's incarcerated here and you know, facing some pretty serious charges might have something to do with that.
Well, John Holt, I think it's important to talk about now the process of what's happening here with the jury selection. Now, they're being selected, and their job will be to decide the death penalty?
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the normal process after someone pleads guilty for murder?
Right. In South Dakota, the way that it works is there are two trials, generally. There is a trial to determine guilt or innocence, and then there is a trial to determine the sentencing. There are separate juries for each. Although a person can waive their right to a jury trial and have a judge decide, as the last two inmates who were sentenced to death did, Eric Robert and Rodney Burgett, as this was a couple years ago, they decided to let the judge decide. But in most cases, you get a jury for the sentencing phase, and if even one of those jurors votes for life in prison instead of death, then you get life in prison. So the chances of obtaining a life sentence with a jury are a lot greater.
Now, this jury selection is expected to take a couple of weeks, a few weeks more than the process for say, a homicide case. And again, this is because we're dealing with a complex issue?
Yeah, it's a complex issue. It's a complex case. There are a lot of factors that lawyers want to ask potential jurors about. They want to make sure they have someone who's kind of in the middle of the road, as they describe it, someone who is willing to consider a death sentence and someone who is willing to look at life in prison. They don't want someone who thinks that anyone who does X, Y, or Z automatically gets the death penalty, and they certainly don't want someone who says, well, my religious beliefs make it impossible for me to even consider a death sentence. In other words, some discussion of this yesterday in the courtroom, the defense lawyers say, well, the law only requires that a person consider a death sentence. It doesn't mean that you have to actually be willing to vote for it. And I think there was some sort of hair splitting going on in the courtroom. There was some back and forth between the judge and the defense lawyers on that point. But that particular issue, whether a person would be willing to consider a death sentence, is something that each and every one of the hundreds of jurors who are considered for the case is going to have to be questioned about. They're going to have to think about it, and they're going to question them in groups in the morning, and then in the afternoon they send everyone out and they do individual questioning. So they're able to ask even more personal questions outside the presence of the rest of the jurors, outside the presence of the media and anybody else, so that they can really sort of dig in and see what a potential juror's feelings are. And it's not just about the death penalty, of course. That is the big one. You have to ask those sorts of questions. But it's also the typical questions that you'd ask anyone during jury selection. Do you feel this way or that way about police? Do you feel this way or that way about inmates? The last time that Minnehaha County had a death penalty case, death penalty sentencing, it involved someone named Daphne Wright. Now, Wright is she's hearing impaired. She's black, and she was homosexual. So they had a lot of questions to ask people. Do you have prejudices? Do you have preconceived notions about people in these minority groups? And yesterday, during group questioning, and I'm sure in the individual questioning, which I didn't hear, but I mean, there were. Sort of broad brush questions in the group questioning about people with substance abuse issues, people with mental health issues. Do you know anyone who has mental health issues? Have you ever dealt with people who have mental health issues? How do you feel about people who struggle with chemical dependency? You know, do you feel that a person is responsible for their actions? while they're inebriated? You know, things like that. Those are the sorts of questions they really need to dig in, you know, and defense lawyers want the jury to be made up of a certain type of person who's going to think a certain way about things, and prosecutors want, you know, both sides have their preferred sort of juror that they would pick, and they'll sort of weed through all these prejudices, and they'll come up with a list of 59 eventually, and then each side will get to strike a handful of them without saying why. So they're going to know, the lawyers and the judge are going to know quite a bit about the people who are going to sit on the jury, and McVeigh, of course, because he's there during the jury selection. They're going to know quite a bit about these people before the arguments begin.
Now, yesterday, you were there, John Holt, in the courtroom, and I understand that one of the potential jurors actually knew the murder victim personally.
Yeah. If I recall, there were at least three people who mentioned knowing her or being acquainted with her. One of them said that she was very close to the family. Well, two people said they were pretty close to the family. One of them actually broke down crying, saying, she said, I don't ever want it to happen again. And Mr. McVeigh apologized to her as she was dismissed out of the courtroom. They said, well, you're not probably the best juror to sit on this case, is what the judge said. And as she walked out, I heard him say, I'm sorry. So it's a pretty emotional experience for the people who are going through it, for the people who are going to be forced to make this decision. But just even being asked the questions, it can be pretty emotional. And I think what's interesting about a death penalty case is that we're covering this, obviously. We're talking about it, you and I. But this is something that happens with any homicide case, any major case. These sorts of questions are asked. And it's really the high-profile nature of the case gives us a chance to talk about this, because this is something that, you know, jury duty can be something as simple as deciding, you know, a DWI case, but it can also be this. It's part of our duty as citizens, and this is what it means to take part in that decision-making process.
You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. We're talking with Sioux Falls Argus leader, courts and crime reporter John Holt. He's covering the jury selection that began in Sioux Falls courtroom to decide the fate of confessed killer James McVeigh. Now, once the jurors have been selected, 12 of them, three alternates, what is it that they're deciding? First of all, they have to decide whether he's eligible for the death sentence?
Right. As I said before, generally in a murder case where they're seeking the death penalty, there'll be two phases. There'll first be the trial, at which the prosecutors will attempt to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the person actually committed the offense of first-degree murder. McVeigh obviously pleaded guilty, so that part's not going to happen. But the second part, where they determine sentencing, has been, and this was something that the judge decided to do in this case, it's been divided into two parts, because the defense lawyers say, well, he shouldn't be eligible for the death penalty because he's guilty but mentally ill, and of course the prosecutors in that part of a trial are required to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that at least one aggravating factor exists with the murder, and that would make him eligible for the death penalty. So basically, the judge said, we're going to do those two parts first. We're going to talk about those things first, and the jury will decide whether or not McVeigh is in fact eligible under South Dakota law to receive this sentence. And if they decide that that is the case, then they're going to come back and we'll hear the rest of the arguments, and that will be the point at which we would hear mitigating factors, mitigating circumstances. Those are the words that they use to describe essentially the defense's argument as to why the person should stay alive, as to why they don't deserve the death penalty. You know, they had a terrible childhood, they don't understand right from wrong, this, that, or the other thing happened in their life that put them in this position. And that part comes second. That might not even happen.
So what happens then if jurors agree with the defense that he's not eligible for the death sentence?
Well, you know, it could just be one juror who agrees with the defense. Mm-hmm. If they agree with the defense, it's life without parole. That's the only other option. And if one juror says that he doesn't deserve the death penalty, that's the sentence that he'll get.
So this has to be unanimous.
Exactly, yeah. The death penalty case, all the jurors have to vote for death. And it's... it's a pretty high bar. It's a pretty high bar. As I mentioned, Daphne Wright earlier, she did not get a death sentence. It's a pretty intensive process. And as I said, there, you know, it only takes one person. So if just one person says, well, I think that there is a possibility that this person could be rehabilitated, or they could contribute in some form or fashion to society, or improve themselves in prison. I mean, if one person says that, then there will be no death sentence.
And any ideas how much longer the jury selection will go on?
Well, yesterday the judge was talking about 2 weeks, maybe longer, and then the trial itself, where they present the aggravating factors, that could take anywhere from 2 to 3 weeks as well.
All right. Well, John, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us on Dakota Midday.
Thank you, Carl.